Christmas? Yeah. You tell me. Welcome. And we are back again talking about vows. And last week, if you remember, we were talking about determination. And we read about determination from Bhagavad Gita. And I want to tell you something very significant about determination, which you probably already know, but I want to bring it out and discuss it a little bit. And it's a very simple principle. The principle is like this. You've probably seen in your own life that if you really, really, really want something, then basically you'll overcome any kind of obstacle that comes your way to get it. And then you'll see that if you don't really, really want something, then when the obstacles come, what do? You go, ah, it's too difficult. I don't want to bother. It's not worth it. So oftentimes when we really want something and we're willing to do anything to get it, we may not feel like we need to be determined because it becomes our natural mode of operandus. That we just want it so much that there, in a sense, there's no question of mustering up determination. It's already there by the nature of our desire. And if we don't really want it, it may, and in some cases, it may be extremely difficult or impossible to muster up the determination to get it because we really don't want it that much. Any of you out there in Krishna.com land ever experienced that? That you're like, something you want, you'll do anything for, you'll undergo any difficulty, any austerity? Like we use the word austerity. And austerity, as we use it, doesn't mean just bodily inconvenience or inconvenience in general, but it means inconvenience for, as we apply it, inconvenience with the goal of achieving something spiritual, not austerity to achieve something material. But even in the material sense, we see how we and other people will undergo great sacrifice if they really want to achieve something. One time, there's a funny story. The devotees, after lunch, they had probably overeaten. And it was Prabhupada's custom that he would take a little nap after lunch. So those who were serving Prabhupada would take advantage and also take a nap. And then one time, Prabhupada got up and he did whatever he does after. He wakes up in the afternoon and he didn't hear his servants. And I think it must have been an hour or two after he woke up and he found his servants were still sleeping. So he was quite upset with them. So he woke them up and he said, "You're worse than the non-devotees because they're now they're working, they're not sleeping. And you are sleeping, you're doing nothing. So they're working harder than you." So it's a fact. If, you know, they're working to maintain their families. They'll undergo difficulties. They want these things. So it can be quite easy if your life gets a little too easy and you don't have any real aspirations and just want to make everything easy, then you won't find much determination for anything. That's a problem. And in spiritual life, Srila Prabhupada said, in easygoing life and advancement in Krishna consciousness, they're at the opposite ends. They don't go together. So that's another subject. We'll talk about that later. But now we're talking about being motivated and how important motivation is towards the goals we want to achieve in our ability to remain committed, focused, determined, fixed. You know that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Anybody know that verse out there? There's a verse which says, the devotees, they're resolute in purpose, their determination. What is that verse? Vyadasatnika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana. their intelligence is fixed. Eka means one, ekeha, kurunandana. And those who are not resolute, then their intelligence is, it's diverted, it's many-branched. So, Krishna consciousness, now that we have this problem, I'm saying, well, we have to really want something, and then we'll remain determined, no matter what. You know, like they say, Edison, you know the story, they say he, in his effort to discover how to create the light bulb, he went through something like 1,000 failures. But he was so determined, it didn't deter him. It just, in a sense, inspired him to go further. So he really wanted to do it, obviously, and that's why he continued. So our problem we may have is that in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, we may not really want it as much as we should, or as much as we need to. So oftentimes when a devotee wants to be committed to something, but they know it's going to be difficult, they may take a vow as a force or a something to impel them to be committed to something that they fear they may not be committed to unless they officially commit. So that's where vows come in. If we are very committed to something, very determined to achieve it, then practically, even if we don't take a vow, internally we're already vowed to achieve it. But sometimes we're not, but we want to be, and externally committing helps us. I'm going to do this. It's kind of like, once I make that commitment, at least in theory, once I make that commitment, I can't back out. Just like you may make a deal with somebody, or you'll give your word to do something. And once you give it, if you follow your word, then you can't back out. Okay, that's it. I have to do it. So vows can be very empowering. And you can also create vows for certain time periods, like during the month of October, November, which is called Kartik. It's recommended in the scripture to take some vows, to do some things that you wouldn't normally do. So you can take a vow, for example, not to eat certain foods, or you may take a vow to chant more rounds, or you may take a vow to get up earlier, or whatever it might be, to read more. So it's kind of like, you could say, it's a standard practice recommended by scripture that during that month you take vows. Then at the end of that month, then you give up those vows. If you don't have to, but normally that's the understanding. So a lot of these sadhus, saintly persons, what they would do during Chaturmasya, they would take a vow to eat once a day. And if you're really following it, then you would eat dal or khichdi, which is rice and dal, mung beans or some bean mixed with rice, and no spices. It's totally plain. And then you wouldn't eat it with your hand, but you'd eat it like a dog. And you would... Should I demonstrate? Well, you can imagine, if you can't eat with your hand, you have to lick it off the plate, basically. So I think their hands would be behind their back, and they would just eat like that. So whatever they could eat that way. It's not very relishable. I don't know if you've ever eaten that way, but I don't recommend it. But you could see it's not as relishable as eating with your hands, if you just have to eat with your tongue. So they would do that, and they would only eat once a day. And they would do that for a month, and they wouldn't cut their hair. Or shave. So that was a typical, it's called Chaturmas, it's 4 months, a typical austerity they would do. And it's said that one of the reasons they would do this austerity is because in India, during those 4 months of the Chaturmas, it rains and the sadhus could not travel, and the traveling and their teaching was their austerity. And so they couldn't do that. So they wanted to maintain some austerity while they weren't traveling, so they would do that form of fasting. It's called Chaturmasya. Okay. I'm just looking to see if anyone has any questions. Oh, yeah. So Rasa Rasika has given us that verse about the resolute determination and the irresolute intelligence. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. So, as I was saying, one way you can define vow or commitment is that you remove any option for not following through on what you're committed to. That's why you create a vow. So in that sense, you can become empowered by your vows to do things that perhaps you wouldn't normally do. If you are faithful to your vows, if you make a vow and you say, yes, once I commit, once I speak this word, this is what I'm going to do, then you become empowered. And oftentimes, you can do things which are difficult, or you can do things which you haven't done before. Perhaps even do things you think you're not capable of doing. So there's a lot of power in that vow. And vows are often done for our own personal benefit, although they may be made to others, even to our spiritual master. Ultimately, we're making the vow for our own benefit. And a wonderful aspect of a vow is because we're committed to do it, it often can become a habit, because we're doing it every day. And so it becomes a habit. So initially, maybe I couldn't develop the habit until I made the vow. But once I made the vow, and I do it every day, it becomes easier. And then it's almost like you forget you made the vow. It just becomes a way of being for you. This is what I do. There's no question of not doing that. So that's really the ideal way to evolve in a vow, is that it becomes part of your existence. It becomes part of who you are, part of what you are. So that's real integrity, a real holistic approach to vows. So, now, okay, there's a question from Bhaktin Carol. What about enduring austerities that we impose on ourselves, or any unnecessary austerities? In other words, are you asking, can you impose austerities that are unnecessary? And also, could you be asking, can you impose austerities that are too difficult for you? Or are you saying, can you be hard on yourself? Well, while you answer that question, I'll answer what I think you're asking, which is the first thing, unnecessary austerities. I'll tell you a story. You want to hear a story? Everyone likes stories, don't you? I'm reading a book, which is the stories of the lives of many people who are involved in kirtan. It's called The Yoga of Kirtan, which is available, I believe, at krishna.com. It's an interesting book. It interviews many devotees and people outside the Hare Krishna movement who are also into kirtan, and about their background. And it's all stories about their lives and how they got into kirtan. These are performers, semi-well-known performers, or very well-known performers in that kirtan genre. Anyway, stories are interesting. So here's a story. In Vrindavan, it may have been 1974 or 1975, Srila Prabhupada was going out on a morning walk, and Prabhupada would go on morning walks everywhere he lived. So one devotee, senior devotee, who was able to go on those morning walks was late. They had already left, and he wanted to join them. So he just ran and joined them. It may have been in the winter, it may have been cold, and he didn't have any shoes. And when he joined them, Prabhupada eventually saw that he didn't have any shoes, and he asked him, why aren't you wearing any shoes? And he said, I was late, and I wanted to catch up with you. I didn't have time to get my shoes. And Prabhupada said something like, Krishna consciousness is already difficult enough. Don't make it more difficult. So, austerity is nice, but you don't want to perform austerity which may divert you from Krishna consciousness. Of course, there's one verse. It's kind of interesting verse. I believe it's from the Narada Pancharatra. Narada Muni says, what is the use of austerity if you have Krishna consciousness, or if you practice Krishna consciousness? What's the use of austerity? Because Krishna consciousness is the goal of austerity. Or you could say Krishna consciousness is the real austerity. And if you perform austerity, and you don't get Krishna consciousness, that austerity was useless. So what's the use of that austerity? So a lot of devotees like this verse because basically the verse is saying, what's the use of austerity? Because ultimately, we don't really want to perform austerity, do we? You know. But of course, we see that pleasing Krishna, you know, that is the goal, not just, you know, austerity for austerity's sake. That's more of the other spiritual paths, where they're trying to discipline themselves, and they're trying to give up sense gratification. And so, like we say, you know, we take nice prasadam. Don't take too much, don't take too little. Don't sleep too much, don't sleep too little. Live comfortably, not lavishly. And, you know, we want to create an environment which is ideal for executing devotional service. There was one devotee. He was he took a lot of managerial responsibility. And if you've ever taken a lot of managerial responsibility, it can be very difficult. A lot of problems come to you, and you're always, from morning till night, there's always things to be done, things are always going wrong, there are always problems. We have to deal with people, which is not always easy, and dealing with their problems and relationships that aren't going well. So he was a sannyasi. But his living quarters were not what you think a sannyasi, not how you think a sannyasi should live. I wouldn't say they were really lavish or extremely opulent, but I would say they were very nice by material standards, as nice or nicer than most non-devotees have. So I went in his room, and I guess he could kind of see that, or he just suspected that I would see his room a little with kind of wonder, why you as a sannyasi are living this way. And he told me, without me asking, he said, my austerity is management. He said, so I need some little extra comfort here in this part of my life so I can do the austerity of management. So that might be instructive to us. And then, you know, you have four varnas and four ashrams, so it's recommended. Varna means your occupation. Ashram means whether you're single or married or a sannyasi, or you've been married and you're renouncing that. So, you know, you don't want to do if you're not able to be single and you're struggling, then it's better to be married, because then you'll be more peaceful and you can think of Krishna. If you artificially renounce or artificially do austerity, it can backfire. So, yes. So Natalie wants me to explain the question. The question was, can we impose our own austere choice about? Oh, that wasn't. I didn't answer the question. Let me. Carol, what about enduring austerities that we impose on ourselves? Okay, so are we supposed to impose our own austerities, or are what we told to do? Both. Because, so Natalie, she's asking, talking about austerity, which means voluntarily accepting some inconvenience or personal difficulty for Krishna's service or to advance our own sadhana, our own practices. So, she's asking about imposing our own austerity. Are there austerities imposed on us? In other words, things we should follow? Or can we impose our own austerities? Well, there are austerities that are imposed on us, but within that we can choose how much we're able to follow. And many of them are general principles. Like, we have a general principle. If you study Prabhupada's books, you'll find general principle is to minimize sense gratification and maximize service to Krishna. So what does it mean to minimize sense gratification? Well, that's individual. You have to decide what that means according to what you're capable of doing. For someone, it might mean minimizing sense gratification might mean something totally different than what you can do. They may be able to sacrifice more personally in forms of comfort or sense gratification than you. But the idea is to simplify our life. And if our life is simple, then we can be more Krishna conscious. You know, sometimes you can look at austerity simply meaning not buying something that you want, that you really don't need. That's a form of austerity. A form of austerity may be to chant extra rounds. Let's say on Saturday, you can say, I'll do the austerity of chanting extra rounds. Or it can be even be an austerity to, some people don't like to read, so that can be an austerity for someone, to read more. I'm going to finish reading Bhagavad Gita by April. I'm going to finish reading one chapter of Bhagavatam every month. That can be an austerity. So for other people, that's not an austerity. They just do that. So it depends. So yes, within the principles of Krishna consciousness, you are monitoring the degree of your own austerity. And whether you need to take a vow, that's another thing. You may not want to because as I was saying last week, you don't want to take a vow that you can't follow, then it won't mean anything. But, you know, there are certain internal commitments you can make without taking an official vow. Like you know the story of Bhima? Bhima took an official vow to be celibate, to never marry. What was Bhima? No, what was it? Bhishma. Bhishma. And what was Bhishma's name before he took that vow? Who knows? Anybody know? Devabrata. I think he might have been given that name. Udi says it was Devavrata, but I think that was... Anyway. But he took a vow not to marry. It's a long story. And that was because his father wanted to remarry. And the only way that the woman he wanted to marry, the only way her father would agree is if her son would inherit the kingdom. So Bhishma's father agreed, but the woman's father said, well, you have a son. And then Bhishma's father said, well, my son won't inherit the king. And the woman's father said, well, his son may inherit the king. So then Bhishma said, then I will take a vow of celibacy so I won't have a son. And when he made that vow, then the gods chanted Bhishma, which means very firm or very strong. So he got that name, Bhishma. So he took that vow of celibacy. Powerful vow. Why was I talking about that? I can't remember how that story came up. Anybody can remind me? Why did I tell that story? Anyway, we'll have to go around in circles here to remember. So we're talking about taking these... Oh yeah, I think I was making the point some people can take vows that others can't. And so Bhishma could take that vow. No, I was saying, sometimes you may not want to make a vow you can't commit to. That's what I was saying, all these things. So, but Bhishma took that vow. He needed to take that vow externally so everyone would know. And he was able to commit to that, and he did commit to that. So that was wonderful. So we don't want to take a vow we don't want to commit to. But as I said before, you can take vows which are time sensitive. I'll do this for a week, or I'll do this for a month. And you can take vows which are very small. Like, I once took a vow to read Prabhupada's books every day, but the vow allowed me to read one sentence. So that way I could keep the vow. So I will read Prabhupada's books every day, even if it's only one sentence. Right? I will eat less every day, even if it's only one grain less. So you can take vows that way. Okay, I'm going to go back to the chat and see, because I'm missing a lot here. Okay. I once asked, this is from Rasa Rasika, if you're not on chat and you're watching this, you can get on chat. How do you get on chat? We're showing you. You go to you see live chat room, right under my, under me you see live chat room, and then you click there, and then you'll, the password is Radhe, you give yourself a name, you come in, and then if you want to ask questions or participate. Okay, so we need to go back to chat. So, I once asked Ramaya Swami Maharaj, whom I used to travel with for 9 years, about this verse. I can't remember his exact answer, but my question to him was, what is the meaning of many-branched intelligence for those who are irresolute? Can you explain this? Well, I think we can see it from the point of view of determination. It's difficult to remain fixed on the goal. That's one way. Or another explanation is that their intelligence is being employed in various ways for material enjoyment. So it can't be fixed in spiritual life because it's being employed in so many other things. I mean, you can see that materially in the material world, you know. So much intelligence is going into how to expand the way we can be comfortable in this world, the way we can make life easier. So, you know, definitely the intelligence is used that way. And to be fixed in Krishna consciousness, it's, you know, we want to use our intelligence to understand how to become fixed. So even, as I was saying, even if you're fixed, but you're fixed on material enjoyment, then your intelligence is, you can say, it's all over the place, because it's all over the place in all kinds of sense gratification. You know, as opposed to Krishna's pleasure, it's, you know, thinking about how to enjoy. I mean, I look at it this way. I grew up by the beach, right? So any of you out there, if you've grown up by the beach, you know that you can get a lot of enjoyment at the beach, especially in the summer when it's warm. You can go surfing, go body surfing, you can go sailboarding and whatever else they're doing now. What are they, flying? You fly behind a boat, or, you know, jet skiing, skimboarding. You know, so many ways to enjoy the ocean. And if you live in the mountain, if you don't live near the ocean, you live near the mountains, and or you live in the snow, then there's so many ways to enjoy the snow. I've never lived in the snow. I'm so unfortunate. I can't enjoy snow. Half my life is wasted. But the point is, you know, and out here in Florida, if you don't live near the beach, then you figure out how to enjoy, and you go to all the lakes, and you float down the lakes, or you go fishing, or you take your boat down the lake. So it's like that. Wherever we are, you know, you can see the environment, people figure out how to enjoy the environment in different ways. So it's like that's where the intelligence is going. It's just, it's all over the place in terms of how to enjoy. And you can see, if you want to be a devotee, you really, your intelligence really has to be fixed on austerity, on Krishna's pleasure, how to uplift yourself spiritually. Otherwise, you know, if you let your intelligence go, it'll start thinking about how you can enjoy. You ever see these cat? What do they call the Sky Mall catalog on the airplane? This is like you go. If you ever go through the Sky Mall, it's just like how to make life easier. So that could be a. The Sky Mall could be an example of this verse of many-branched intelligence. It's like, you know, put your feet on this, sit on this, have the massager on your back, have this table over here so you don't have this cushion here so you don't have to lift your arm this way. You know, and you know, I predict that in the future everything will be voice activated so you can just sit in one place and you have all these robots around you doing everything for you. Bake me a potato. Make me a salad with this dressing on it. Turn off the lights. Turn on the television. You know, and then you'll just talk to your computer. Go to this website. Buy this. You know, I mean, that's what our intelligence is used for. And then you see, like in India, what do? They go to these Magh Mela festivals. It's freezing cold and they take bath. And they do all these austerities. That's in their blood. Okay, so let's, we have to go back up so I can see what's going on the chat here. That was a long-winded answer. Okay. Madhurya Lilananda Devidasi. Nice name. You can get to it by going to Krishna.com, clicking the link. Okay. She's telling you how to get to the chat. Okay. I asked a question to Mahatma. Okay. Yes, that was it. One who is not firmly fixed, mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. I mean, you know, the material world is created to divert us. Just walk outside, you can become easily diverted. I remember when I was a new devotee, I was so unripe in Krishna consciousness. But the temple program was, you know, it was really wonderful, and we really, you know, we really got into it. We were all very enthusiastic in those days. I mean, you know, we were a new movement, and Prabhupada was there with us, and we were all hippies, and we were all revolutionaries, and we wanted to take over the world, and Prabhupada was talking about making the world Krishna conscious. So we were really on fire. So we would have very, very nice programs in the temple, very enthusiastic. We would chant our rounds enthusiastically. We would discuss the Bhagavatam, we would have enthusiastic kirtans. And then we would go outside to preach, and it was like my Krishna consciousness was being sucked up. Because I was so immature in devotional service that just by going outside and associating with the material world, I just felt like everything I was doing in the morning was being sucked up. So it doesn't take a lot to divert us. Which is why vows are so nice, because vows are really, I really like, it's like when you take a vow, it's like there's this voice there. Like you want to do something, but the little voice says, no, 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 you can't do that. You promised you wouldn't do it. It's like when you go on a diet, say, okay, I'm not going to eat these foods. And you get the craving to eat them, or you see them in the store, or you see somebody else eat them. And the little voice says, no, 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 you promised you're not going to do it. So if you adhere to the vow, then that helps you. And if you're not strong, then you'll tell the little voice, well, I'll just do it now. You ever done that? I'll just do it now. Dangerous. Okay. Okay. Who do you make the vow to? Yes. As I was saying, ultimately, I mean, you can make a vow to yourself. You can make a vow to your guru. You can make a vow to another devotee. You can make a vow to your friend. You can make a vow to the deity. That's a little, you know, you have to be careful if you're going to make a vow to the deity, or you're going to make a vow to your spiritual master, or someone who could be your spiritual master. But if it's just a friend and you say, I want to make a vow. But oftentimes you can make vows to yourself. Right? You can commit to yourself. And if you're not sure, I would suggest just commit to something to yourself for a week and see how it goes. And build up. And, you know, really, it's so important. It's just to find a place where you can remain steady. Because you don't want to be committed, so-called, and not be committed. You don't want to create a vow that you can't keep. So you got to find your sweet spot where you can be steady. And of course, the idea of a vow is to stretch you a little bit, because if you just want to find that comfort zone, then, you know, everything's happy and you feel warm and fuzzy, and you just stay in your comfort zone. And so we don't just want to remain in our comfort zone. We want to stretch a little bit, but we don't want to stretch so far that we can't really hold on to it, let's speak of reach it. We want to stretch to a point where we feel we can be comfortable with that. We can maintain it. And, you know, there are different levels of vows. Some things are more simple. And, you know, I won't eat any sweets for a week, or at least less sweets. That's different than taking more serious, especially taking initiation vows. That's very serious. So, So, Ram is from Ayodhya. That's why you have the name Ram. Okay. So, all right. Okay, now. Looks like you guys are having your own conversation there. So I want to continue here, and I want to talk about, I mean, Bhakti and Carol kind of, your question helped lead into this. I want to talk about just why, you know, the first thing is, somebody off the street might just wonder, well, why would you do anything to make your life seemingly more difficult? Because austerity, you can define austerity as accepting some kind of inconvenience or difficulty for the sake of spiritual advancement. So, you know, people might think, well, why would you? First they would think is, do you have to do that? Does God want you to do that? Does God want you to take, you know, some kind of trouble that's so inconvenient and unpleasant? Doesn't he want you to be happy? Doesn't he want you to enjoy? Yes, he wants you to be happy. He wants you to enjoy. But sometimes it's necessary to restrict ourselves to advance, and that will make us happy. So I'm going to read a few things which will answer this question. So please pay attention, because I think you'll find this very enlightening. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's the ninth canto. Excuse me. It's the second canto. It's the ninth chapter. And it's text 24. Srimad Bhagavatam, second chapter. Blah, 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 blah. I'm half asleep here. Second canto, ninth chapter, text 24. Translation. This is Krishna speaking. I create this cosmos by such penance. I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only. Penance means the same as austerity, restricting oneself. Even sometimes the connotation may be, or the definition may be, doing something cause some kind of self-inflicted suffering or great sacrifice, which may cause some so-called suffering, we could say physical suffering, or just something which is difficult, or one may have to endure some internal or mental suffering or physical suffering. Purport: in executing penance, one must be determined to return home back to Godhead, and must decide to undergo all kinds of tribulations for that end. Wow, I'll read that again. That was so nice. In executing penance, one must be determined to return home back to Godhead, and must decide to undergo all types of tribulations for that end. So the first point Prabhupada is making is, what's the purpose of penance? The purpose of penance is to return home back to Godhead. And one must decide. If you want to become Krishna conscious, then you have to make this decision to undergo all types of tribulations for that end. In other words, be willing to do what's necessary, even if it's difficult. Now Prabhupada makes a very significant point, this point has helped me so much, and I think it will help you also. Even for material prosperity, name and fame, one has to undergo severe types of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in this material world. So here Prabhupada's making such an important point, because we were asking the question, why should I undergo austerity? I mean, what's the purpose? Shouldn't I just have an easy life? Isn't that what Krishna wants? So here Prabhupada is saying, even if you want to achieve something material, you have to undergo austerity. You have to undergo penance. You have to undergo difficulties. Everybody has to do it. It's not a question of just doing it for Krishna, just doing it for spiritual advancement. In the material world, everybody has to do it. Nobody rises to the top without undergoing difficulty. So that's just the nature of how the world is created. Because sometimes we may think, why do all this austerity? Shouldn't we just have a comfortable life and be Krishna conscious and be happy And Prabhupada's saying, anything you want to achieve that is great, you have to undergo austerity. And I mentioned that last week, how Prabhupada said, anything you want to achieve, anything you want to do that's first class, then it's going to be difficult. So, you know, that's the way this world is created. Nothing's going to be easy. Even for material prosperity, name and fame, one has to undergo severe types of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in this material world. Why then are there severe types of penance for the perfection of devotional service? Well, that's the question we're discussing. Here, Prabhupada says something really interesting and a little bit shocking, in a sense. An easygoing life and attainment of perfection in transcendental realization cannot go together. Now, should I read that again? Or was that too depressing for you? Did that rain on your parade? Did that destroy your, did that ruin your life? Is it like going to be all misery from here on? Now that you've, you know what they say, if when you hear knowledge now, you're obliged to follow it. It's more, there's more of a reaction for not following something once you hear it. You know that story, the preacher went to the coal mine and he told them about Jesus, and none of them had heard about Jesus. And they said, who's Jesus? He said, oh, he's the Son of God, and if you don't follow him, you go to hell. And they said, well, what if we never heard about him? Would we go to hell? And he said, no. If you didn't hear about him, you wouldn't go to hell. Then he said, then why did you come here and tell us? Now, if we don't follow him, we're all going to go to hell. So that's the way it works. Once you know, then you're obliged to follow, otherwise you suffer some consequence. So, unfortunately, I just read that. Now everyone who's hearing this is obliged to never have an easygoing life again. An easygoing life and attainment of perfection in transcendental realization cannot go together. An easygoing life and attainment of transcendental perfection, attainment of perfection in transcendental realization cannot go together. In other words, you know, I mean, it's not difficult to understand. You take a spiritual figure, like someone like the Pope, or any kind of saint, any tradition, or any sadhu, and you know, any person on the street, and say, how do you envision a saintly person? Well, they won't envision a saintly person at a bar drinking with a girlfriend. They'll envision a saintly person as someone who is self-controlled, disciplined, lives an austere life. So Prabhupada's point is that anyone who's practicing spiritual life is meant to live that way, to some degree. Okay. The Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, he wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. What does that mean? Does that mean Krishna's going to throw darts at us and see if we can tolerate the pain? Well, in a sense, yes. He's going to throw something at us. And he's going to see. Can we tolerate it? Are we going to give up Krishna consciousness? You know, there will be difficulties, and it's really important. I think it's important to expect the difficulties, because that way you're ready for them, and also you can embrace them in a sense that, you know, because you know that difficulties are necessary, and that's going to help me in my devotional service. So we don't run away from them. Now, if a devotee by nature is more austere, then we can say Krishna may not have to throw the difficulties at him, because the devotee himself is disciplining himself to such a degree that Krishna doesn't need to do that. But Krishna may do that for others. He wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. The order is received from the Lord either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master. And to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. So here, Srila Prabhupada describes penance, and he's basically saying to execute the order of that you're given from the spiritual master. And if you're not initiated, then you could say that order will be coming from Srila Prabhupada, his books, and Srila Prabhupada's disciples. So to execute that order, that's a kind of penance, because we may not find that order favorable for our material or material pleasure or material sense gratification or our material comfort. you know, going sleeping is very comfortable and waking up is not, especially if you wake up early. How many of you like to wake up early, like really early in the, how many of you find it easy to wake up really early in the morning? Anybody? I think most of us find it difficult. Laying in bed, nice and comfortable. We don't have to face the world yet. Nice and warm. I have to get up and do what I did yesterday, and if I don't like what I did yesterday, oh, I got to do it again. Easier just to lay in bed. It's so comfy and cozy. And what to speak, when I don't have to work, then I can even sleep later. Anyway, if you're advancing in spiritual life, of course, you want to wake up, because then you want to wake up to chant your rounds and read Prabhupada's books and do so many forms of devotional service. But anyway, we know rising very early in the morning may not be easy all the time. So that would be an example of an austerity, as Prabhupada's describing. The order is received from the Lord, and to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. One who follows the principle rigidly is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. So really, if you wanted to, you know, say, well, what are the vows? What are the commitments we should make? Well, here Prabhupada's saying, okay, you get the order from the spiritual master, and your determination to follow that order, that's your penance, that's your austerity, that's where you're meant to be committed. And what else is Prabhupada saying? An easygoing life and spiritual advancement, they don't mix. They're two different things. They're two different worlds. And, you know, it's everyone's material conditioning to want things easy. Nobody wants to make things difficult. Life's difficult already. We want to make it easier. Look at all the conveniences, as I was saying. It's just, you know, we want things easy. You know, if you could have five servants and just tell them what to do, wouldn't you want that? You know, we want it easy, you know. So, you know, we think, if Krishna loves me, if Krishna really loved me, then he would send somebody to massage my feet, cook my dinner, work my job, so I could just have an easy life. So maybe Krishna doesn't love me because he's not sending all those people. No, that's not how Krishna loves you. Krishna may love you by sending you someone who slaps you in the face and saying, you thought you were going to enjoy this world? Slap in the face. No. You're not going to enjoy the world. You're going to serve. You're a servant. You're not an enjoyer. That's my position. It's not your position. You will enjoy by serving me. So sometimes it happens that way. So now I'm going to go back to the chat. So, okay. Bhakti and Carol is asking, so the difference between unnecessary austerity and useful austerity is to assist in Krishna consciousness with a goal of returning home back to Godhead. So like everything else should be used to further Krishna consciousness. Yes, you know, sometimes there's people actually like to do austerity, but it doesn't further their Krishna consciousness. Some, you know, you can do austerity to further your fame. Like Hiranyakashipu, he did a lot of austerity, and he did austerity to become powerful. So, you know, I mean, if you want to become good at something, you have to do the austerity of practicing. Practice is not always fun. So austerity is there, as Prabhupada said, it's built into achieving anything you want to achieve, either material or spiritual. So the principle for us is to do what's going to help us in Krishna consciousness. And then, as I was saying, do something that you can maintain some steadiness in. You know, sometimes a devotee will do something and it's so difficult for them that actually the austerity ends up taking them away from Krishna consciousness. So you don't want to do that. Or sometimes it's said that too much austerity can make one hard-hearted. So if the austerity is not endowed with bhakti, and one is just being overly harsh on oneself, overly austere, heart can maybe become hard. The austerity is meant to purify the heart and soften it, not make it hard. So, necessary austerity is taking a cold shower in the morning and like that. Artificial austerities might mean not wearing a coat when it's freezing. Yeah. Also, might also mean taking an ice cold shower and getting sick. which I've done many times. So I can't do the ice cold shower anymore. But that's the principle. And you want to hear the story of Prabhupada's giving a class? And while he was speaking, about three or four devotees coughed within a short period of time. And he stopped speaking. And he said, he was concerned that they were sick. And he asked them, or he turned to the temple president. He said, don't they have warm cloth? Aren't you giving them sufficient cloth? And then he said, you know, you should take care of yourself. Then he told a story. I believe he told the story about Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami thought he had committed an offense to Lord Chaitanya. He actually didn't commit an offense, but he thought he committed an offense, and as a result, he decided he would kill himself. And Lord Chaitanya found out, and he said, you can't do that. He said, why can't I do that? He said, because your body belongs to me, it doesn't belong to you, so you have no right to kill it. So Prabhupada said, similarly, he said, your body now, it belongs to Krishna, so you have to take care of it. So doing some austerity, you know, just to suffer for no reason. You know, I mean, you could, you know, break glass and walk on it, but that's, you know, what's the point? You know, austerity is in relation to bhakti. So, yes, you can look in Bhagavad Gita, so Ram saying there is enough austerity without creating artificial austerity, just that is true, as Prabhupada said. Yeah, you're right, Prabhupada said that. So, then Bhaktinkara says, aren't austerities of the tongue, eating only prasadam, yes, speaking only of Krishna, yes. Speaking the truth, speaking sweetly is austerity of the tongue, you'll find that in Bhagavad Gita. Only to hear about Krishna, that's an austerity. Yeah, controlling every sense is austerity. It's definitely, yeah. It's different. It's not easy. You know, if you have a taste for hearing about Krishna, you won't want to hear anything else. You have the taste for speaking about Krishna, you won't want to speak about anything else. You won't want to hear anything else. So, we're always being tempted. There's so many nice things to look at, to taste, to hear, to see. To speak. So, you know, speaking sweetly about others, that's an austerity. You know, it's very easy to speak ill of others. You know, we all do it. So to speak nicely, that's an austerity. Can you go one day and only speak nicely? That would be an austerity. See if you can do that tomorrow. Not speak ill of anybody. You'd be surprised. It's not that easy. So, should we accept austerity beyond our capacity or level of advancement? Is this part of surrender and depending on the Lord to help us if we do? Or should we accept austerity according to our nature and act within our position within Varnashram? I would say, of course I already addressed this, but I'm going to take another point. In making the point that we should accept austerity according to our nature and within our position within Varnashram. In making that point, which is true, we also always want to keep in mind the need to keep Krishna consciousness dynamic. And I know some people are more dynamic by nature than others, and dynamic I mean not charismatic, but I mean moving forward. So it's always helpful to try or to be focused, to have an intention on achieving a level which is a little bit beyond what you're doing presently, because I've seen, and you've probably seen also, it's very easy just to stagnate and get very comfortable. So now I'm in this position and everything's good and I just stagnate. So Shastra says human life is rare. So if human life is rare, and Krishna consciousness is even rarer, we don't want to stagnate. Because if we stagnate, then we have to come back, and then we just have to continue. Want to hear a nice story? We heard this morning. Maybe you won't have to come back and continue. Maybe you'll be as lucky as this person. This person had seen was watching the Harinam party, and he went up to the devotees and he said, "What is this? I've never seen this before. What are you guys?" So the devotees explained a little bit about what they were doing. And then he spontaneously joined the kirtan. And right in the middle of the kirtan, he had a heart attack and died. And the devotees asked Prabhupada what happened to him, and Prabhupada said he went back to Godhead. So if we're fortunate enough to die during a kirtan, then yes, despite whatever austerities we did or did not perform, we'll go back to Godhead. But my point is, we should be well situated in Krishna consciousness, as Rasa Rasika is saying in Varna and Ashram, but at the same time, it should be dynamic. We should always be stretching a little bit. And, you know, thinking, all right, I don't know how much longer I have to live. I'm not as Krishna conscious as I'd like to be. I'm not as Krishna conscious as I need to be. So I should always be stretching. But what is the next level? Where can I go from here? You know, anyone who is progressing in whatever they're doing always looks at things that way. How can I improve to the next level? How can I be better at what I'm doing? They're never satisfied. And I think that's a key ingredient to any kind of progress, to not be satisfied with where you're at, but always be looking for ways to improve. But, you know, that's the kind of inspiration that Srila Prabhupada had given us. You know, we would distribute books. We thought, you know, we had broken through in such a big way that we couldn't do any better. And then Prabhupada said, okay, next year double that. And we're thinking, how can we double that? Took every bit of our energy. But that was Prabhupada's way of keeping us in a dynamic upward motion. You know, so I think it's very healthy. I think both are true simultaneously. You know, you don't want to be shooting for the moon and falling on your face, but you don't just want to be comfortable. So, you know, generally, as Bhakti and Carol is saying, austerity is to get up early, live simply. Anything that's advancing in ours, anything that helps advance in Krishna consciousness, that's a form of austerity. No, that's okay. Further answer to your question. Another aspect, I guess, would be Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Whether we accept siksha or diksha instruction through these channels and just surrender, depend on the Lord to help us, even if the austerity is beyond our capacity. Book distribution could be an example of this. It's not for everyone, but you can make great advancement if you just surrender beyond your nature. Yes. We can always do more than we think we can. And sometimes, when we're fortunate, we surrender a little more than we think we're able to. And we see that Krishna empowers us. There's no doubt. And that's why I was saying that vows are empowering. Because once you make that commitment and connect that vow with prayer, Krishna, please help me keep my vow. Certainly Krishna is willing to help his devotees. That's the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness. God helps us, Krishna helps us, but he likes to help us. He's willing to help us, but he wants to help us to the degree that we want to be helped. So, you know, you have this team, you know, it's all teamwork. It's not just you alone, it's Krishna. So, what do they say? All things are possible with God? I mean, that's the way to look at it. You know, you can test out that theory. Stretch yourself a little bit and say, okay, Krishna, we have a team here. I want to be on your team. Will you help me? I pray that you'll help me. This is what I want to do. Test out the theory. Yayatam mam prapadyante, Krishna. He reciprocates. So, now it is 9 o'clock in Alachua, and we are supposed to end at 9. So, does anyone have any more questions before we end? Would you like an assignment for next week? Perform some austerity, a little greater than you're performing this week, and you can report to us next week what you did and what your experience was of that. Would you like to try? Little austerity, whatever it may be. Or big austerity, if you want to stretch yourself. Perhaps it could be something that you have felt for a while that you should be doing, but you haven't done yet. So this can be an impetus for you, that this week you'll do it, and if everybody does it, that would be great. And we can meet next week and we can hear from everyone what happened. Maybe you tried something and you failed. Maybe you tried something and you partially succeeded, or you fully succeeded, or you did something and you can report to us how you prayed and how Krishna helped you, and that would be wonderful. Get some real life stories. We can have the Chickpea Soup for the Soul series next week. Right? Or actually it's Khichdi, because Khichdi is like the Indian chicken soup, the cure-all for all diseases. But chickpea soup sounds more like chicken soup, so sometimes we call it Chickpea Soup of the Soul. I did a seminar in prayer, and I think before we did the seminar or during the seminar, we asked devotees to share how they use prayer in their life. It was so inspiring to hear all their stories, real-life stories of devotees. So we can have some real-life stories next week, okay? So pick your austerity for this week and let us know how it goes, and we will see you next week. And Hare Krishna. Start our Chickpea Soup of the Soul program.